Hey, you're listening to World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger. And today, we're taking a peek inside the mind of David Byrne, whose creativity knows no bounds, from his career with Talking Heads to all the projects, art installations, theater pieces, and solo albums he's done. His latest record is called American Utopia.
There's nothing funny about making money.
So I got the chance to talk to David Byrne before a recent show on his American Utopia tour. We had to wander behind the stage to go and find him for our interview. This was an outdoor venue, a festival show, so there were a bunch of trucks parked along the way. The trucks were open so you could see what was inside. And as we're walking by, we see the first truck, some band's gear is in there, next truck, some other band's gear, next truck, 12 bicycles all standing in a row. And we were like, this has got to be David Byrne's truck. That's your truck, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so do you get the whole band to ride bicycles around the city with you? Tell me about
that. Yeah, I do. I do this all the time when I tour, and I find it's a great way to get out, explore the whatever city you're in, wherever you are, have a feeling of freedom, that you're your own master. You can do whatever you want, go wherever you want, stop whenever you want. You're not trapped in a hotel room or backstage all the time or whatever.
I'm just picturing all of you riding down a road in a city, like just all 12 of you in a row, like led by David Byrne. I almost feel like you're like the Pied Piper of city biking.
Yes, we've done that, where we've all gone somewhere en masse and we all have identical bikes. And people go, is this some kind of club?
Well, welcome to the club, where exploration, freedom, and a sense of awe rule the day. David Byrne collects wonder from the world around him and sets it to music. And it doesn't have to be big wonder. He sees the magic in what could be mundane, like in this song called Dog's Mind.
But the dogs show no concern. Now the clerks look out the windows at those dogs down in the park. Every window holds a stare. Every desk stands piled with work. Now a dog cannot imagine what it is to drive a car. And we in turn are limited by what it is we are.
That's Dog's Mind. Did you catch that lyric? Now a dog cannot imagine what it is to drive a car. And we in turn are limited by what it is we are. I think that says so much about how David Byrne sees the world.
There are times when I'm seeing that on stage or in rehearsals or whatever we're doing, where I somehow, although that line sounds kind of funny, there's a little bit of humor in there.
There's doggy doo-doo right after.
Yeah, doggy doo-doo right after.
Yeah.
But somehow I find that really moving. I sometimes get choked up on that line. It's about our trying to imagine our limitations as human beings, that our perception, our how we see the world, the things we prioritize are just as limited in our own way as a dog's are. And we feel like we know dogs. We feel like, oh, dogs are, they like this or they like that, and this is what they see, and this is like that. But it's kind of an amusing way of saying, well, yeah, we're probably the same.
Yeah. What I like about it too is when I think about your artistry, I think of you in my mind as somebody who is really able to not see borders and to not see barriers and to try and empathize or connect with any type of creature or non-creature out there. That there would be so much like strange beauty and a little bit of sadness in acknowledging that there are different ways that different people and different creatures experience the world. I don't know. I think it's really profound.
There's a lot of animals on this record. A friend said, David, you got too many chicken references. And the chickens show up in about at least two different songs. There's one where I think the lyric is, what is heaven to a chicken? Well, there's plenty of roosters and lots of corn.
Oh.
That's heaven to a chicken.
It is.
It is. It's kind of like the dog.
It's beautiful.
It's kind of like the dog thing, but it's kind of like saying, well, Yeah, try and imagine what it might be for a chicken. It's not what it would be for us. It's roosters and corn.
It's certainly not. Where do you think you figured out how to be that kind of thinker?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't know.
I'll take it. You're on tour right now, and I guess being in shape and being active is a huge part of your job on stage, and the stage show that you've got right now is so choreographed, it's so energetic, and all the musicians up on stage, for people who haven't seen it, are all holding their instruments, right? So they're not tethered by cords and cables, they're, yes, they're mic'd wirelessly, and they're not tethered, so they can do all this choreography and all this movement. And I guess it seems really important to you, at least in this iteration of your show, that people can move around freely. Why is that so important to you on stage?
I tried an incremental version of that on a tour I did with St. Vincent a number of years ago, not that long ago, where the brass players, we had a bunch of brass players, and they were all untethered. They could move wherever. Mm-hmm. And I thought, can we take this further? It's a really great feeling. Can we do it with even the drums and the keyboards and everybody? A little bit of experimenting and testing, and yes, you can do it. It requires six players to get the sound of a full drum kit and percussion and all that. But it's, again, incredibly liberating.
Yeah.
It means that the stage is empty, that we can move anywhere, and we do. We kind of, if, you know, we face one another, we do all kinds of stuff.
It's remarkable, and seeing it remind me of, I think, my favorite theater experience I've ever had, which was seeing your show with Fatboy Slim, Here Lies Love, right? Which is like...
Same choreographer.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah,
is that Annie B. Parsons? Is that who it is?
Yeah.
So for that show, right, you took the story of the First Lady of the Philippines, Imelda Marcos, and turned it into, I guess, this like electronic musical. But what it was for the audience, we were all being ushered around the stage as it was moving and sort of like part of the action, where you're not sitting, you're not standing still. And I feel like it says a lot about the way that you... approach art or performance as something that is alive. Like, it's not something to necessarily like be watched in a static sort of a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I will say yes, that on this show, this tour, the audience does tend to dance pretty soon.
Yeah.
By like the second, third song or whatever, they're usually up and dancing. And we don't tell them to do it. It's all... They just get up and do it.
I think you kind of do tell them to do it with your own body, though.
We're all moving. Yes, we're all moving around.
Everything you do
is
imitation.
We're having a great time.
Yeah.
And I think, there's a feeling like, look, they're having a great time. Why don't we do that?
Yeah. Do you ever get out of breath? You move around so much during the show. Is it hard?
When once in a lifetime, I get out of breath. Not from the moving.
Uh-huh.
But because there's in the vocal, there's almost no breaths.
Yeah, you really set a task with writing that song for yourself to have to perform for years and years to come. Let's play a little bit of that while we're talking about it.
And you may ask yourself, where is that large automobile? And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful house. And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful wife.
That's a bit of Once in a Lifetime, a Talking Heads song. I'm here with David Byrne. We're talking about his latest record called American Utopia here for World Cafe. Angelique Kidjo took on that song.
Yeah, and she did the whole album.
The whole album, Remain in Light.
I saw her when she did, about maybe a year ago.
Yeah, well, she visited World Cafe and talked about that project recently. Mm-hmm. And the way that she told the story of first performing that song with you on stage, it sounded like you tried to go and see her show and she whisked you up onto the stage. Is that how, can you tell me the story
exactly.
from your perspective?
I thought I was just going to be an audience member
right.
and enjoy myself and because she's such an incredible performer.
Yeah.
And of course, she spotted me and said, you're coming down here. You can't say no.
And what was it like? What did you feel?
Well, as a musician, my first thought is I'm panicking. Like, what key are they doing it in? do they do the same arrangement that we do? And that kind of, to be honest, that's my first thoughts. And then, you know, then it's just like, okay, just let go and do it.
Totally. But the cadence is totally different. And the phrasing is totally different. And the feel.
Yeah, she is doing... The songs are all totally recognizable.
Yeah.
But she has adjusted them. And she's made... When I saw her show, she did these segues between the songs where she goes... She sings in Yoruba, the language that she was... Where she grew up.
Uh-huh.
And... So she kind of goes back to her African roots and relates that to this material, which I thought was incredibly flattering to me.
It had to be, right? She had said that she grew up in Benin under the communist regime and they couldn't listen to music and then fled to Paris, and your music was some of the first music that she heard with Talking Heads, and she felt like a taste of home, like feeling her African roots.
Yeah,
to that. I just think that must incredibly mean a
flattering.
Lot.
Yeah.
Let's listen to Angelique Kidjo's version of Once in a Lifetime.
And you may ask yourself, where is that large automobile? And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful house. And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful wife. Letting the days go by. Letting the days go by. Into the blue again. Once in a lifetime.
That's Once in a Lifetime, Angelique Kidjo covering the Talking Heads song. I'm here with David Byrne on the World Cafe. So while we're on Talking Heads, I really wanted to ask you about something that you said back in the 80s about singing. And granted, you said it to a fake interviewer in a parody video that you were doing for Stop Making Sense. But you said, and I don't want to get the quote wrong, so I'm going to look at it here. You said, the better the singer's voice, the harder it is to believe what they're saying.
Oh.
And I think that's such an interesting thing to say. Did you believe it? Is that what you mean? Do you mean it?
Yes, I believed it.
So where are you on the spectrum?
I still sometimes believe it. I think we've all occasionally heard an incredibly gifted singer, professionally gifted. Their singing tone, they can hit every note. Mm-hmm. They can do all the runs and do everything perfectly. But somehow it doesn't connect emotionally. They're just like going through, they can do everything perfectly, but somehow some essence is not going across. And that's kind of what I was referring to. Sometimes if it's too easy, if the singer is just gifted, naturally gifted in that way, they have to kind of push to reach some kind of deeper place.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not be perfect all the time. And allow a little bit of slippage in order for the kind of the emotion and the kind of human connection to come through.
How do you hear your own voice on that spectrum from really believable to what you're just describing?
I think my own voice has gone from a kind of a not totally comfortable thing to listen to. There was a lot of kind of yelping early on, although that wasn't the way I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a lot of my early singing as being that I was really doing the best I could.
Did it bother you then that people heard it as yelping?
Yeah, that they heard it. They heard it as all this yelping and everything. And I thought, I was trying to croon or sing in kind of a normal voice. I guess it's not coming across the way I imagine, the way I hear it in my head. Over the years, I think I have managed to more closely get to where what comes out is a little closer to what I imagine. So I can still do that, which I still do occasionally,
mm-hmm.
but I think now I have the range to be able to do other things as well.
Yeah. Let's play a little bit of the song Here now. I feel like that's a really good example of this sort of melodic and I really love the vocal performance that you deliver that song. That's okay. Yeah, let's play a bit of that.
Here is a section that's extremely precise. And here is an area that needs attention. Here's the connection with the opposite side.
That's Here. That's the closing track off David Byrne's latest record called American Utopia. David Byrne is my guest here on The World Cafe. One of the many things that you're working on right now, to me, seems sort of like a world-scale art installation. It's Reasons to be Cheerful. For people who are hearing of that idea for the first time, can you just like in a nutshell, explain what Reasons to be Cheerful is?
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow. It might be about 2 years ago now. And I would wake up every morning and read the newspaper, well, on my tablet or whatever. And within about half an hour or an hour, you know, I'd be full of rage and upset and just, or depressed or angry or whatever. And I thought, there's got to be an antidote to this. I can't function like this. Surely the world is not as bad as this. And so I, little by little, if I saw an article about something that seemed hopeful, I'd start to save it, save them into a folder. And over the last couple of years, I found quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I labeled it Reasons to be Cheerful. And I started doing these little talks where I would basically just say, okay, I found these things. I'm going to tell you about them. They fall into different categories. There's kind of hopeful signs in education, or in the rise of civic engagement from kind of people running for office that have never run for office before, and that have, you know, they're either a school teacher or this or that. They're not like career politicians, but they feel like, I'm going to get engaged. Lots of different things. In climate and energy, there's things happening. And it's nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might have started out more partisan, but I took all that out.
Yeah. One of the reasons to be cheerful, I think, has to do with the American Utopia Detroit edition, which is this wonderful project undertaken by students at the Detroit School of the Arts. And they did a version of your song, Everybody's Coming to My House. So I want to just play a minute of the original just to remind World Cafe listeners out there what the original sounds like.
There's plants and trees. Make a closer inspection. If you get down on your knees. Now everybody's coming to my house, and I'm never gonna be alone.
So that's your original song, David Byrne, here on World Cafe. So tell me the story about how Detroit School of the Arts ended up taking on that song.
I was talking to my friend Eric from Luwakabop Records.
Which is your record label.
Yeah. And it was his idea. He said, why don't you have all these other communities do something for your songs? But the first one we did was a choir from a school in Detroit. And they interpreted this song, Everybody's Coming to My House. And to me, when I heard their interpretation, their version of the song, which is, there's a piano, but it's more or less a cappella, I thought it changed the meaning of the song for the better.
Yeah, how? Because I thought so too when I heard it. I heard it a completely different way. And I should say, the video, like, they're all in the house of their teacher, right?
Yes, Mrs. V. Yes, that's where they rehearse.
She's sitting at the piano. So tell me how it changed the meaning of the song for you before we hear their version.
In my version, to me, it sounds like I have some trepidation about all these people coming over to my house.
Huh.
And for them, it's the opposite. It's welcoming. It's like, yes, come on over, come on over. We all do live in the same metaphoric house. Everybody, let's join together.
And when they sing the lyrics about, like, I'm never going to be alone. It's really moving.
It's very moving.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's play their version on the radio now. Here we go.
I wish I was a camera, I wish I was a postcard.
I welcome you to my house.
You didn't have to go far.
A house in a garden. There's plants and trees.
Make
a closer inspection.
If you get
down to your knees,
everybody's coming to my house. And we're never gonna.
That's Detroit School of the Arts Vocal Jazz Ensemble, covering Everybody's Coming to My House by David Byrne. He's my guest here on The World Cafe, and that song is on his latest record, American Utopia. I want to talk about how you end the show that you're touring right now.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cities, it seems like all the American cities anyway, with a version of Janelle Monáe's song, Hell You Tombout, 2015, The Wonderland Collective. And I'm just going to play a little bit of her, of that Wonderland version. Here we go.
Ayanna Jones, say a name.
So there you go, as people can hear, the lyrics are chanted names of black Americans killed by police and by vigilantes, followed by the phrase, say his name or say her name. Why did you want to end your current show with that song?
I feel that, a couple of reasons. I felt like the trajectory of our show implies more social and political engagement from me and possibly from the audience, but certainly from me and the band. We just feel like this is where we're at now. And in the times that we live in now, I felt like we're kind of obliged to be more engaged in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 years ago, in 2015, I heard the song that she did, and she did it at the Women's March in Washington. I just thought, this is one of the most moving, whatever, political, let's say, songs that I'd ever heard. And I was surprised that it didn't catch fire and you didn't hear it everywhere. So when it came, I thought, how are we going to end this show? It seems to be going in this direction. I thought, let's do that.
Hmm.
I got in touch with her to say, I'd like to do your song. Does it seem weird for a slightly older white man to be doing this song? And she said, no, this is great.
Did she say anything more? Like, I'm so fascinated by that.
She said something like, this song should belong to everyone.
Right.
She said, everyone should be able to do this song.
Tell me what you see from your perspective on stage when you sing it. Like, what do you see happening in the audience? Are people chanting?
Yeah. As you said, this is yes. One of the beautiful things about the song is it's not accusatory. I mean, there's an implication that there is a lack of social justice. But it's not accusatory. It's not accusing the audience. It's not pointing a finger at any specific person or group. It's saying something's not right, and it's also giving tribute, remembrance, mm-hmm. to these lives that are gone. And yes, the audience has, at that point, we've had the kind of high points of the show where the entire audience is dancing and they're having a great time, and then we keep the groove going, but it gets quite serious.
Mm-hmm.
It ends the show on a vibe of, this is where we are at in 2018.
Right. That's fascinating. just arc, because if I think about the way that you open the show, you're examining a human brain alone on stage with the song Here and pointing out all these regions on the brain and sort of taking us into this world, right, where people can forget everything that's going on outside and be part of this amazing spectacle, and to bring it back out at the end. You also in the audience, like, can't help but say the names along with you, and the act of doing that is just remarkable.
You see, when you say the names, you can picture these people, the people who were killed. Sometimes it's really hard to sing.
David Byrne, here on the Royal Cafe's latest record is called American Utopia. Just one more question for you, I guess. We've talked about many of the creative things that you're doing, and we've barely even scratched the surface of your creativity. And I was trying to think about what unites all of the things you do, like collecting reasons to be cheerful and putting them out there, this stage show that you've done, turning a building into a musical instrument, art installations, interactive theater, all of that. And what strikes me, I guess, about your artistry is that you seem to have a remarkable sense of awe and to sort of want to put wonder in a frame. And I don't even mean wonder always in a positive sense, even like we're talking about the way that you're closing the show, but taking something of note and putting it in a frame for us to see. And that's, to me, what you do as an artist. How do you see what you do?
I think that's true. I think I often see something and I stop and go, look at that, or look at that person, or what is that person feeling, and why are they doing that? And this morning, on my way to the train station, was it? I went to a museum this morning before catching the train. I saw a little food cart that had, those pictures of what they were offering, like an egg sandwich and stuff painted on the side. And it was like a door right in the middle of the eggs. And I thought, that's pretty great. A door right in the middle of the sandwich. And then a couple of blocks further up, and of course I took phone pictures, there was a giant painting way up on a building of the Egyptian soccer star, the football star, mm-hmm. They didn't win the World Cup, but they got pretty far. And this guy, this one player, is just like absolute national hero. So it's this giant picture of him on the side of a building in the middle of New York. Mm-hmm. I just thought, that's pretty nice.
And noticing things like that and bringing them to our attention through your art. Yeah. Well, we really appreciate you doing that for us. Would you pick a song of yours, any song that you'd like for us to go out on as we say goodbye together today?
Oh, goodness. There's one from a number of albums back called Everyone's in Love with You.
Ooh.
I don't often sing my own songs, but I was singing that one last night.
Why? What is it about this song?
I was singing it to myself as I was kind of riding home from dinner on my bike, and I was thinking, was I writing about myself, or was I writing about a person that I was having a relationship with who seemed much more socially adept than I felt, who seemed at ease with groups of people and very easy making conversation with everyone, and I felt a little awkward about that. And the song is kind of about that. But I'm thinking, singing it to myself, well, could it also be the way other people think about me?
I mean, you're a well-loved celebrity, if I can use that word, that I think people would...
Because I don't think of myself that way, but then I realized, maybe other people think of me that way.
Well, let's all come to our own conclusions as we go out on the song. David Byrne, I have loved talking to you so much. Thank you.
I introduce you to my friends, and that's the last I see of you. Discovered my big secret.
fascinated by your smile. They copy all the things you do.
That is Everyone's in Love with You from David Byrne's 2001 album, Look Into the Eyeball. I love that he picked that song. Thank you so much to David Byrne for letting us spend some time with him and his incredible creative mind. Don't you wish that you had one of those bicycles and that you could join David Byrne's bicycle gang for a day? A year or the rest of your life? I do. Thanks to David Byrne. Thanks to our producer, John Myers, for all of his work on that session. Hope you dug it. I'm Talia Schlanger, and this is The World Cafe.
So-and-so, but you're the one I want to know. I'm jealous and a little proud. I want to kill and kiss you too.